Call Back the Past.
In 1917, the British royal family changed its name to Windsor, while British and French troops were making advances on the Western Front. On the home front in England, amidst Zeppelin raids, comedian W.H. Berry reflected the times in his song, I Want to Go Bye-Bye.
It's a nuisance when hands come around any day and they fly low. And we left off maroon as a warning to say when to lie low. So when the invaders appear in the skies, I'll go in the cellar and just close my eyes. I want to go to bye-bye when hands are overhead. It's nice underground with the bottles all round. Will somebody put me to bed?
French Supreme Allied Commander Foch Ranady's troops with this message.
Il me soit permis de saluer votre drapeau.
Allow me to salute your flag.
Que j'ai vu flotter à côté du nôtre.
Which I saw waving side by side with our own.
Et emporté par des âmes ardentes.
Which I saw carried by ardent souls.
En des bombes victorieux de la Marne.
Victorious thrust from the Marne.
De la Meuse et de la Moselle.
Meuse and the Moselle.
Jusqu'au Rhin du Rhin.
Up to the banks of the Rhine.
While in America, events were leading towards an inevitable involvement for the United States as Germany ignored President Wilson's ultimatum to cut down on indiscriminate submarine warfare. April the 6th marked the official United States declaration of war on the Central Powers, and American mothers, wives, and sweethearts started knitting for their boys over there. No less a singer than Enrico Caruso joined in the musical chorus.
We'll be over, we are coming over, and we won't come back till he's over, over there.
America's declaration of war was not a popular one. Many decried Wilson's deviation from the United States policy of isolationism. Years later, Herbert Hoover was to recall the terrors of the war that was erroneously dubbed the War to End Wars.
I was one of the few civilians who saw something of the Battle of the Somme. In the distant view were the unending trenches filled with 1.5 million of men. Here and there, like ants, they advanced under the thunder and the belching of volcanoes from 10,000 guns. Their lives were thrown away until 500,000 of them had died. Passing close by were the unending lines of men plodding along the right-hand side of the road to the front, not with drums and bands, but with saddened resignation. And down the left side of the road came the unending lines of wounded men, staggering among stretchers and ambulances. Do you think one can forget that? And it was but one battle out of 100.
Hoover's words are made more real by recalling that the scientific advances of 1917 included a twin-engine plane for dive bombing, the use of liquid fire and mustard gas, and ever more deadly improvements in the art of submarine warfare. One member of the United States Navy, however, was more concerned with music than submarines, as Paul Whiteman built on his reputation with his 40-piece Navy band. But the most famous band of 1917 belonged to a fictional character by the name of McNamara.
Oh, my name is McNamara, I'm the leader of the band. And though we're small in numbers, we're the best in all the land. Oh, I am the conductor and we often have to play with all the best musicianers you hear about today.
When the drums go back, the cymbals play, the hearts will play.
While the Italians were being routed by the Austrians at Caporetto, General Allenby was having success in what was called the Southern Front as he captured Jerusalem. Palestine was in the news again as Lord Balfour's white paper acknowledged the rights of the Jews to a national home in the territory. Already there were many Jewish pioneers on the land. Golda Meir recalled,
"Water situation was awful. We didn't have enough water at all in Merkavia. And we couldn't raise anything that needed water. And another thing that we suffered with, that I remember, and that is little tiny flies, something like sand flies. And they would come at the rise of the sun. So we would go out to work in the fields at about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. Until about 8 or so, 7:30, everything was fine. And then would come an attack of these little sand flies. Get into your eyes and your nose and your ears. Cows would run away from pasture attacked by these sand flies. But we would go out in the morning, no matter how hot it was, no matter what time of the season it was, with long sleeves, kerchiefs on our heads, and blouses with high collars. And I always thought that, all right, we have trouble with the Arabs, somehow there'll be peace with them. Mosquitoes, well, there are swamps, we'll dry the swamps, no more malaria. What's going to happen to the sand flies? That, to me, was the problem of the building up of a Jewish state, how to overcome the sand flies.
Dear Brutus by J.M. Barrie was one of the plays of 1917, a year which also saw the musical productions of Maytime, Leave It to Jane, and Chuchin Chow. The world was at war, Greece was in an invidious position, having to consider the Allied ultimatum to withdraw their troops from Thessaly. Greek Premier Monsieur Venizelos decided to comply and, for good measure, to break Greek relations with the Central Powers. The Greek Prime Minister travelled to England where, at Mansion House, he made this speech.
I can assure you that during that protracted and painful crisis, the great majority of the Greek people never approved of that treacherous policy. The good opinion of your great empire is a precious asset for the Greek people. Ever since their hesitation to a free political existence, the Greeks have looked for guidance to the great and splendid lessons which English political life offers.
The Pulitzer Literary Awards were first made in 1917, a year which provided books by Henry James, The Middle Years, Norman Douglas, South Wind, and Mary Webb, Gone to Earth. The movies were characterized by Max Sennett comedies, the joint debuts of Harold Lloyd and Bevy Daniels in Just Nuts, and Douglas Fairbanks Sr. as a modern musketeer. It was in 1917, too, that this song was heard.
Till the boys come home.
1917 saw the passing of Auguste Rodin at the age of 77, Herbert Birbaum-Tree at 61, Edgar Degas at 83, Leander Starr Jameson at 64, and Buffalo Bill Cody at the age of 71. There were other great names in 1917. Lenin was one, as Russia was wrecked by revolutions. In March, Tsar Nicholas abdicated, and by October, the Bolsheviks were virtually in control. Historian A.J.P. Taylor puts the 1917 revolution into perspective.
In February 1917, there were a series of bread riots in Petrograd, as the capital was then called. Curiously enough, not because bread was short. The riots were caused by a rumour that rationing was going to be instituted. This very often happens, of course. Immediately, everybody bought a great deal more bread than they needed, and bread disappeared from the shops. And at this, there were riots. The riots took a more violent, more persistent form than usual. The forces which were supposed to restore order lost their nerve. The ministers of the Tsar implored him to give way. The Tsar told by his ministers and the generals that Russia would be stronger if he disappeared, abdicated. That first revolution is absolutely extraordinary in this way, that the guardians of order who'd been preparing for 50 years and more to fight on the side of the Tsar did absolutely nothing. All the generals, with a sigh of relief, said, well, we should be able to get on better with the war if you're not here.
Back the Past was devised and presented by Percy Seath and comes to you by courtesy of the Springbok Radio Preservation Society of South Africa.